Welcome to the Secret Code to Government Proposal Success podcast series brought to you by OCI. In each episode, we will shine a light into new ways that government contractors can win new business, secure recompetes, and achieve long-term success. When it comes to developing a successful government proposal, it is critical to focus on both winning the contract and the overall profitability of that contract. In addition, proposal writing has larger, farther-reaching legal implications, which can include the potential for bid protests and false claims issues. And today we're joined by Shlomo Katz, who is counsel at the law firm Brown Rudnick, who will be sharing more insights with us about this today. And Shlomo, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Yeah, great to have you. And as a government program lawyer, you've certainly had a lot of exposure to proposal work, and we appreciate you sharing your insights into preparing better proposals. And from that perspective, let's start at a high level. And if you could tell us why the decisions that a proposal team makes affects both the chance of winning and the profitability of a contract.
Sure, I'd be happy to talk about that. A proposal is not just a pretty marketing document. It describes how you plan to provide what the customer wants to buy. Imagine if I would ask you for a proposal to put a swimming pool in my backyard. First of all, if the proposal is well written, I'm more likely to choose you over some other swimming pool company. If your proposal is shoddy, then I'm not going to choose you. So that relates to the winning of the contract. Now, if I do choose you, then we're going to sign a contract, and I'm going to expect you to do what was in your proposal. So if your proposal is thorough and clearly written, we will both be on the same page and we'll understand what you're going to do and what you're not going to do. And we won't have disputes about it. The job will get done on time. And if you wrote your proposal right, you'll make a profit. If your proposal is not thorough and is not well written, then we're going to get into arguments about what was required. That's going to delay the project, which, of course, time is money. And I won't pay you because I won't be satisfied with the job that you did, and you're going to end up spending money on hiring a lawyer like me, which also costs money, even though it's great value, but it costs money. And so for all those reasons, you're going to be less profitable or have a loss.
Thanks, Shlomo. Appreciate those insights. And if you don't mind, let's dive a little bit deeper and tell us about how proposal teams can promote the profitability of a contract.
So some of the things that the proposal team can do to help promote the eventual profitability of the contract is first to make sure that they understand the RFP requirements. Contractors or bidders have a right to ask questions about the RFP. If a requirement is not clear, don't guess, ask. Ask the contracting officer, you know, what is meant by such and such paragraph of the RFP or of the statement of work. Now, one thing to keep in mind is that questions that are asked will become public. So if you have some novel idea that by asking a question, you might telegraph what your technical approach is, then maybe you don't want to ask the question, but it's at least something you should be aware of because that will clarify the requirement and avoid disputes later. Another important point is to not confuse what the customer wants or what you think the customer wants with what the RFP requires. Those could be different, and that can lead to a dispute later because the government's program manager will say, you know, I want this to be red. I want it to be out of case involving software for redacting Freedom of Information Act requests, and the program manager said, I want it to be hashed diagonally from upper right to lower left, let's say, and the RFP didn't say that, and the contractor had to do a lot of work, extra work that wasn't required by the contract to satisfy the customer, which is always a tough situation to be in, and it results in extra costs and disputes, and we ended up settling that one in favorably to the contractor, but the contractor still had to spend a lot of money on litigation. And one last point is to be sure that you understand the labor laws that apply to the contract. Many contracts, maybe most contracts, have requirements to pay the workers certain wages and fringe benefits, whether it's a construction contract or a services contract. There are laws, the Davis-Bacon Act, the Service Contract Act, and there are executive orders issued by the president that require certain wages and fringe benefits if you don't understand how that works, then your bid may be too low and you will lose money, or worse yet, you will be excluded from contracting in the future for 3 years for violating those laws. So those are all important things that the proposal team needs to understand.
Yeah, great insights there, Shlomo. Appreciate that. And perfect segue into our next question is, please offer us some tips for writing a good proposal that will win. I believe it includes like writing style, stating assumptions, assigning responsibilities, all that good stuff. I'd love to hear more about that.
Okay, so all of that is very important. Many, many people advocate writing in the active voice rather than the passive voice, and that does add clarity. I don't think that that's absolutely an ironclad rule. Sometimes the passive voice could be more clear, but let's take some specific examples. Okay, let's stick with the swimming pool since we're talking about that. If you write, "We will provide a swimming pool, but will not provide lane dividers," then I know you're going to provide a swimming pool and not provide lane dividers. If you don't mention that at all, then I don't know if you're providing them or not. And if you write, "Lane dividers will be provided by others," as I've seen people write sometimes, then I don't know if you mean the lane dividers will be provided by a subcontractor that you are going to arrange as part of your proposal, or do you mean that I have to find someone to provide the lane dividers? If you think of this in terms of a computer network contract, so it's, if you specify, "We will provide 10 desktops and 10 laptops and 10 printers," then I know exactly what you're providing. If you specify the make and model of that equipment, then it's even more clear. I can't claim that I was expecting, a bigger hard drive, more RAM, a higher printer capacity. If you think of it in terms of a construction contract, if you say, "We will bring one bulldozer," and then there's a differing site condition which requires two bulldozers, it's very clear that that's an extra and that I'm entitled to more money. So that ties in not only to the clear writing, but to the assumptions. If I said, "My assumption is this job requires one bulldozer," and it turns out to require two, that was stated clearly, and we know that bulldozer is an extra. So if you say, in a swimming pool case, "Our price and schedule do not include clearing the property. We will complete the swimming pool by July 15 if the owner has cleared the property by July 2nd. It's very clear. Who has responsibility for clearing the property? What are the assumptions about when it will be done and how that affects the cost and schedule of building the swimming pool?
All right. Excellent. Great insights there. Really, the big takeaway, it sounds like attention to detail is just absolutely paramount, correct?
Paying attention to detail and stating those details. Don't make assumptions. Don't assume your reader understands.
Awesome. Great insights there. And let's shift over and tell us about how the way you write a proposal can affect the outcome of, I guess, more on the legal side of things, bid protests, contract disputes, even the possibility of going to jail for false claims.
So again, in terms of bid protests, it's all about making sure your reader understands and giving the reader, the evaluator, a basis to choose you. When a bid protest is filed, the Government Accountability Office, the GAO, or the Court of Federal Claims, they don't reevaluate proposals. They look to see whether the evaluators followed the evaluation criteria and evaluated proposals reasonably. If the evaluator makes assumptions about things that are not stated, which happens sometimes, for example, if the offeror is an incumbent, the evaluator says, "Hey, I know these guys, so I know what they're going to do." I had a protest once where the incumbent did not talk about training, and the evaluator said, "Well, I know they're going to provide training because they do under their current contract." And GAO said, "No good. Their proposal didn't talk about training, and they were required to talk about training, and you, evaluator, have no business assuming that they're going to do something they didn't say they're going to do." And so GAO sustained that protest, meaning the throughout the evaluation. So again, don't assume that the reader knows, because even if the reader does know, the reader has no right to read things into your proposal that aren't there. And that's a big issue, and that affects both, you know, bid protests, contract disputes, because later you'll say, well, you knew what I meant. And the government will say, I don't care what you meant. I care what you said, so I'm not paying you. And the same thing about false claims. You know, you knew I was providing a foreign product, so it's not a false claim that I provided a foreign product. And the government says it's not in your proposal that you're providing. Your proposal implies you're providing a domestic product, so it's a false claim if you provided a foreign product. Those are all examples, and clear writing would have avoided all of them.
Great. Shlomo, you know, in many ways, I think you answered my next question, but I'll ask it anyway in case there's anything we may have missed in the question above. But so how can contractors best write proposals to mitigate these issues? I know you talked about attention to detail. Clarity sounds like utmost importance. Is there anything else to note when it comes to writing proposals to mitigate these issues?
I think that really does cover the main points. The most important thing is that, and I've gone to conferences about preparing proposals, and I hear, you know, people talking about a big issue is compliance, following the instructions. And some people tend to, you know, focus on the instructions, which in a federal contract or in federal solicitation are usually in Section L, and the evaluation criteria, which are in Section M. But you really have to read the whole RFP and make sure that you understand the requirements and that you somehow, somewhere in your proposal, answer everything that needs to be answered. This is true for all offerors, and in particular, there's something that we call incumbentitis. As I mentioned before, incumbents sometimes assume that the government already knows the answer, so why should I bother preparing a careful proposal? And that's a good way to stop being an incumbent, because you have to answer the questions the solicitation is asking, or you stand a very good chance of not being awarded the contract again.
Yeah, great insight there about incumbentitis. We recently published an OCI white paper called Contract Recompetes, Don't Drink Your Own Bathwater, which maps out 10 steps for avoiding exactly these kind of issues that you mentioned when it comes to incumbentitis and not resting on your laurels and just making assumptions.
Yes, I saw that white paper, and I thought those were great points that were made there.
Oh, excellent. Thank you for that. Excellent. And now, Shlomo, tell us about Brown Rudnick and your legal services for contractors.
Well, Brown Rudnick is a law firm of about 250 lawyers. We have offices on both coasts of the United States, as well as in London and Paris, and we provide a wide range of services to all kinds of companies and individuals. But as far as government contracts, what I do, we have a government contracts group based in our Washington, D.C. office, and we represent contractors and would-be contractors and subcontractors and teaming members, everything from the pre-proposal stage through the end of the contract and beyond. We help companies understand RFPs and the legal requirements. We help prepare teaming agreements. We help small businesses get the best, from a legal perspective, understand what they can and cannot do to maintain their small business status and take advantage of that small business status when it comes to teaming agreements and mergers and acquisitions and getting investments from, you know, venture capital that may affect their small business status, that kind of thing. We represent contractors in contract disputes, both preparing claims, negotiating disputes, and if necessary, litigation. And we deal with contract closeouts, terminations for convenience, terminations for default, audits of incurred costs, you name it. If it's in the federal acquisition regulation, then we do it. And we're happy to help out.
That's great. Great. Well, Shlomo, we really appreciate your time and your insights today. And before we sign off, is there anything else to add or anything we may have missed?
I'll just end with a little story that probably happened 10 years ago, but it still makes me shudder whenever I think of it. I spoke once to a small group of maybe 40 contracts and proposals related people, and I said essentially the same things that I've said here. And one guy in the back of the room raised his hand and said, I disagree with everything you said. The proposal is just marketing and advertising, and I don't actually plan to do anything that's in my proposal. And 40 pairs of eyes turned around and looked at this guy, and I just said to him, well, good luck to you, because I don't understand why you're not in jail.
I was going to say, there's a potential new client for you right there, Shlomo.
Yeah, well, that kind of attitude leads not only to contract disputes, but to false claims, which are very serious matters. And it's important to remember, if you're involved in government contracts from, you know, federal or state level, that you're dealing with the government, and you not only need to be careful, but honest, and remember that you are writing a contract and that you're going to be expected to do it, and you better write it in a way that will help you and the other side both understand what's going to be done. So the proposal writer or proposal manager's job really doesn't end. I mean, their job ends when the proposal goes in, but the consequences of their job last for years beyond that. And that's the most important thing to remember.
Excellent. Great parting words there. And this is a wrap of the latest episode of the Secret Code to Government Proposal Success podcast series, brought to you by OCI, where Shlomo Katz, counsel at the law firm Brown Rudnick, shared his deep dive insights on tips for writing successful government proposals, both from helping ensure that you win a contract, provide true clarity with the government customer, and also writing in ways that can minimize any legal implications. And Shlomo, thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure.